evening, and welcome to Radio PRS. I'm your co-host, Mike Grant. Radio PRS is brought to you by the Psychical Research Society of Kansas City. PRS is a not-for-profit organization whose purposes include programs and activities to investigate, study, research, demonstrate, discuss, interpret, and expand information concerning psychic phenomena, parapsychology, and related subjects, and to disseminate information by any and all media communication. Psychical Research Society is not just an organization for those who practice. Anyone who's interested in exploring the subjects covered in our mission statement. If you'd like more information on becoming a member, please visit our website at prskc.org. The views and opinions expressed on Radio PRS do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of PRS, its board, or its membership. Our guest this evening is Mandy Noggle of the Brain Fitness and Training Center. You can talk with Mandy and Nikki this evening at 646-668-8212. Now here's your host, Nikki Williams.
Good evening, Mike. How are you on this fine evening?
I'm well. How are you?
I am absolutely wonderful. It's been a beautiful spring-like day. We're expecting some thunderstorms, but hopefully they'll hold off till after we're done with our show today. I am so excited about our guest and our topic this evening. And our guest is a returning guest. It's been a while since she's been with us. Welcome back, Mandy.
Thank you, Nikki. It's wonderful to be back tonight.
Well, it is really great to have you. I tell you what, the last time that you were on, I had so much fun. I always love talking to you because I learn so much. And
well, thank
I dig
you.
That. I really dig that.
Thank you. Well, I really enjoyed being on here last time. It was great. It's great. You're an excellent host.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Before we get started going into our topic, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about what it is that you do and how you came to this point in your path.
Sure. Okay. Well, I'm originally trained as a speech-language pathologist. I work in adult settings, adult rehab settings is kind of where my background is, and I've been doing that work for about 15 years. And a lot of people think that speech pathology is just about helping people speak, but there's so much more to that. And the component of speech pathology that I have primarily spent most of my time working with has been the area of cognition. So how people think, how people problem solve, what needs to happen to help people improve their memory and that sort of thing. And I was doing that in a very strict clinical way until I had my own personal struggle with some issues in that area. I was diagnosed as an adult with attention deficit disorder, which once I was diagnosed, it explained everything.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. You know, I went the traditional route, took different medications like Adderall and some things that probably most people with this condition are familiar with. And those things, although they worked a little bit, they did not work long term. And I still really struggled with it. And I was fortunate that my therapist, the therapist I was seeing at the time, Ed Block from the Life Enrichment Center out in Lawrence, Kansas, shout out to Ed, he is awesome. He got involved in brainwave training, and I was one of the first people that he trained after he did his own training for that and just had amazing results. And that just changed my world. It changed everything. And as I started learning more about that, I was like, oh, my goodness, there's this whole wonderful, rich world here that hasn't even really been tapped into. And I want to explore this some more. So I also became certified in doing brainwave training and started doing that along with the speech pathology. And now I'm starting to move more into brainwave training. And as I've done this journey, I've been doing this almost 4 years, I've really started looking into the topic of expansion of consciousness and looking at some more of these metaphysical concepts, and that there is just so much we still don't know about the brain, but we're learning. And there's so much that we're learning so quickly about it. And so that is what has kind of brought me to my path. Here, what's been fun is I have had a lot of different kinds of clients. I've had, you know, typical mainstream clients working on typical mainstream stuff. And then I've had clients who've come in who identified as psychics. They worked as psychics and worked as mediums. And they had some really interesting results doing the brainwave training as in a way that helped their work. And so that has been really exciting for me to watch, too. So I've kind of straddled these two worlds, and it's been really, really fun. So that's what I was kind of hoping to talk about this evening.
Well, I think that's really wonderful, and that's definitely what we want to focus on, expanding that consciousness, expanding the intuition, deepening that level of spiritual understanding. And I think a lot of people make the mistake of separating their states of being. For example, they think of themselves as they have a physical part of their being, they have a spiritual part, they have a mental part, and none of them are, you know, they're separate. They treat them separately frequently in modern medicine. And
yes,
I think we make a mistake when we do that, because I think they are also very connected, particularly when you talk about the brain. And we think about the brain as being kind of like the control center. But we so often only talk about it as the control center of the body and or emotions and or thoughts. We very rarely delve into the area of it, of what it has to do with our spiritual, metaphysical growth.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating. And I was reading an article earlier, for example, of how they're starting to study where in the brain intuition is connected, for example. And I read a little bit about the my brain stopped working. Speaking of brains. Like, for example, the locus coeruleus, a very, very minute part of the brain that they seem to think is very active in this process of intuition, but they also think that it's a connection with the unconscious. And I think that makes a lot of sense to me. So what are your thoughts on issues like that, on, for example, where does this come from and how is this connected to what our brains can do?
What I am of the understanding at this point, based both on my work and reading that I do to kind of enhance my own understanding, is that our traditional way of thinking is that the spirit or soul or what have you is inside the body, like our body has encased it in some way. And what I am of the understanding now is that our body is more of a manifestation of our spirit and what our spirit wants and needs in order to interact in the physical world and have the experiences that it wants to have in any given lifetime. And so that makes it really interesting, but it really calls back to the point you made earlier, is that everything is so connected. And it is our body works in concert with our spirit to make the world around us occur. And so that has been really interesting to me, this idea that we are so much more beyond our body and in a sense almost outside of our body in a little bit. And that our body is the manifestation of spirit.
Yeah, that makes a great deal of sense to me in what I see with auras and how that soul, the soul of the person isn't encased in the person, and that kind of shines through when you're looking at the energy fields surrounding a person. It isn't just their energy; it's that's part of their soul manifestation as well on a different electromagnetic frequency.
Yes. And what is interesting to me is that based upon what we are knowing now or of the understanding of, is that our spirit, our soul can manifest a body in a certain way, but then the body has these experiences, has these situations, has this belief system that filters all of the experiences that come through us, that then send back information and then manifest new things. And so from this brain training aspect, what I have been really fascinated in is the idea that we may start out, and this is open for interpretation, we may start out in a life, a given lifetime, you know, a certain way, but then as we have experiences, as we have traumas, that changes, that actually changes how our brain is structured and how it works and how it functions. And it can change our belief system. It can change our perception. And so these experiences get filtered through this and then manifest new things that can either enhance or detract from our experience. And,
right, that makes
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, again, it goes back to this wonderful statement you made at the beginning of the program, is that everything is working in concert. And you're so right that in our medical profession, and I think this permeates our entire society, we still operate from this idea that, you know, leaving spirit out of it, we operate from the idea that body and brain are separate. And then we
right.
get into brain and spirit are separate. If you're brave enough to go in and talk to people about brain and
yeah.
spirit, because that is not always welcome. And
yeah.
so there's all these, we're separating. And if we really step back and look at everything, It all works together. Spirit and mind come together. Mind and brain come together. Brain and body come together. And they're all working in concert. And I personally feel like that until we get to the point that we understand that all these things work together, we're always going to have some challenges in helping people outside of ourselves and our own selves move along our journey in a more fluid and joyful way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you know, you talked a moment ago about how traumas, for example, can change what's going on in the brain and can change our perceptions and change our belief systems. And in doing so, that perception, I've always said that perception is 9/10 of reality.
Yes.
Because
yes.
we tend to manifest what we believe we perceive, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And we do. If we perceive ourselves in a negative light, we manifest that negativity. And if we perceive, well, like for example, my favorite example of this is the belief in Murphy's Law. Whatever can go wrong will go wrong. If you truly believe that and you truly perceive that to be the case, that's what you're going to be looking for. That's what you're going
exactly.
to be seeing. And those are the experiences you're going to focus on. And you're going to draw that to yourself. And
absolutely.
It starts with maybe an experience of something that you perceive as negative, or it starts in there. But yeah, we tend to let that experience invade our thoughts and let those thoughts invade each other. And and there's got to be a point, I think, where we have to recognize, okay, is this helping me? Is this perception and this belief system helping me and helping others in turn? How is this affecting?
We have this
incredible, where it's ingrained in us, in our society specifically, in Western society, that our reality affects our thoughts and our physicality and our spirit. And that's where we go wrong.
That's exactly it. And we have this idea that the world is happening to me.
Yeah.
And all of these things are out of my control. But it's easier to watch it in someone else, of course, than watching it
Very
in ourselves.
True.
but I have found, as I have observed both clients that I've worked with and even just in my own personal life, when I kind of, once I became aware of these concepts, I started watching. And I once had this woman, she was in a facility, a rehab facility, It was a fairly nice rehab facility. I mean, rehab facilities are a lot nicer, you know, than they were when I started out. And I know they're nicer than they were even 20, 30 years ago. And a lot of these places are focused on, you know, amenities and having a pleasurable rehab stay, because then you'll tell all your friends and they'll come here.
And they'll make more money.
And they'll make more money. That's exactly right. And this particular woman, every time I worked with her, she told me all the horrible things that had happened in her life. And at one point she said to me, "I've been screwed over my entire life, no matter what I do." And I thought to myself, wow, what an interesting way to go through life. And she said, "Well, look at where I am right now. I'm in this horrible place. This horrible thing has happened to me that's made me come here. And that's just the story of my life." And it was, and I'm sure for her that was true. That's really how she experienced it. But from the outsider's point of view, my thought was, you perceive that this is horrible. It's not necessarily horrible, because I have seen more horrible than this. I have worked in many places. And but then with that, she would make choices that reinforced this horrible experience. So that could include small things like, you know, snapping at the wait staff, or, you know, refusing to do something that the doctor had suggested, and thus aggravating her condition. And yes, and so that was an interesting thing that I saw in someone I did not know very well. I personally have been in the experience of having, you know, a friend or a colleague or a coworker, you know, misinterpret something that had been said in the group, and then all of a sudden respond in a way that then made a neutral situation a bad situation. And so I think we can really see these real world experiences of manifestation just looking around. Like, anyone listening to the program right now could go, "Oh yeah, I had that happen once," or my, you know, sister does that, or, you know, whatever. Once we start noticing it in others, and it's easy to notice it in ourselves when we're doing it, and then we can start changing it.
And like the old saying, when you point one finger at someone else, you're pointing three at yourself. And frequently,
exactly.
I really do think we see ourselves reflected in others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The universe gives us lots of mirrors.
Yes. Sometimes it's like a house of mirrors. Some of those mirrors are not very flattering.
No. Yeah.
But some are the ones where you go, "Ooh, I look good."
Yes. And, you know, honestly, Nikki, the more we focus on those, "Oh, I look good. Oh, I'm doing the right thing. I'm going to keep doing this." Then we make those positive choices. You know, hey, I run. And if you see me in real life, I don't look like I got the body of someone who runs. I don't look like it. But the first got a little app on my phone, and it helped me. And I hadn't done it in years. And my old belief system was, running hurts. It's horrible. I hate it. And I was like, "Oh, I'll try it." And I tried it, and I was like, "Wait a minute. This is fun. I like this." And the more I did, the more I was going, "Yeah, I can do this." And then I started saying, "I'm a runner." And guess what? I go run.
Yeah.
So
what you did there was you were willing to step outside your preconceived notion, your predetermined belief system, and say, "You know what? Let me give this another shot.
Absolutely.
Maybe I was
wrong. Yes.
Maybe there are going to be some positive things I'm going to gain from this." By doing that, by making that conscious decision, you automatically, I think, put your brain into the mode of accepting your good.
Yes. Yeah. That's a beautiful way to put it. Accepting your good. Yeah. That's exactly right. And remembering that although our brain wants to tell us a story of all of our past experiences and all the reasons why or why not something can happen, every moment is a brand new moment that we can try something new. And yeah, maybe for a little while things, you know, do continue to get reflected back to us that, oh, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. But we continue to try, and then eventually we go, oh, wait a minute, it works. I just had to tweak it. I had to do this. I had to do that. I can.
Yeah. Well, and we always have the ability to, we always have the ability to change. We always have the ability to change our mind, to change what it is we're doing, to effectively change our situation. And I think a lot of people get stuck in the trap where they think they're stuck in the trap. Does that make sense?
It absolutely
sounded redundant, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
It's perfect. That's exactly what happens because, again, like I said, it's been a real gift to me to be able to work with elderly people because I get to see different, almost shall we say, results of different kinds of lives. And what has been interesting to me are the elders that I see who have gotten into that trap, like what you said, they say to themselves, I'm too old. It's too old to start. It's too old to learn new things. I've always done it this way. And they have less joyful experiences than the elders who say, guess what? I learned about a Kindle, and I'm gonna figure out how to make this work for me. And I'm going to try new things. Even though I'm 90, I can still learn new things and do new things. And I have had experiences with people. In fact, to be honest, Nikki, the reason why I have a Kindle is because a 90-year-old convinced me that I needed one.
Yes.
He was ahead of the game.
Well, I'll tell you, it reminds me, my grandmother, my 89-year-old grandmother, loves Facebook. She loves social media. It's awesome. I love seeing that. It took her a little while to understand and grasp how to do what she needed to do with it, but she did, and she didn't give up.
Yes.
And she made it work with her, and she's able to connect with a lot of people from her past, family, across the country and in other places, and that has been a really enriching experience for her life. I'm not saying Facebook is for everybody. I'm just saying this is an excellent example of you are never too old to try something new. You are never too old to learn a new skill. You are never too old to expand your understanding of the world and your experience in the world, and I'm going to say a word, well, a phrase that I know you love, cognitive reserve.
Expand your cognitive reserve. And going back to something you said earlier about your grandmother who learned the Facebook, you said it took her a little bit of time. And I think that is another piece that is so important. One of the things that I've started learning a lot about, too, as I've been delving into brain training and this sort of thing, is ego. Ego versus who we really are. And so much of, I think, some of the detrimental outcomes people have is that the ego is so strong and yet at the same time so fragile that it cannot tolerate having a challenge, learning something new, and failing. It's harder to fail as we get older because it's harder to say, oh, I didn't know how to do that. But what you said there, she was open. She was willing to try. She was willing to say, hey, I might not get this as fast as I would have if I was 20. I have a larger learning curve, but I'm going to stick with it. And I'm going to forgive myself for not being fast. And I think that self-forgiveness, too, goes such a long way that it's okay. It's okay to make mistakes and not do things perfect.
That's right.
And
that's right.
We have this great outcomes, when we let ourselves, when we let ourselves fail a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they say it's better to fail than to not try. And I really do believe that wholeheartedly because – everyone who has succeeded has failed on several occasions.
Yeah,
they didn't let that stop them. What I want to ask you about now is one of the things that we use a lot in metaphysics when we talk about We use affirmations a lot. And affirmations, I think, are really wonderful things, but I don't think people always understand how to use them properly and how it is to make them work for us. And I think this is an important aspect of that metaphysics and the thought process and how to get that ingrained in your brain.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about that.
I would love to talk about that. So I agree with you. I have had some experiences with affirmations. I started out being really excited about them, and not from the typical source that one might think of. I followed Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert.
I
followed his blog. Yes, and one of the things he talked about was that there were a couple of reasons why he felt Dilbert was so successful. One was that he literally had no life for 10 years while he was building this cartoon and making it what it is today. So he put in a lot of work and a lot of dedication to it. But the other thing that he put into it was that he wrote affirmations 15 times a day of what he wanted to see success-wise for Dilbert. And if I remember this correctly, and I could be a little bit off, but I want to say that he had a specific syndicate that he wanted to pick up Dilbert. And there are not very many syndicates in the country. I think there's only 3 at this time. Lucky enough, we have one of them here in Kansas City, Universal Press. But he had a specific one, and he wrote that affirmation, and it was picked up. And so that was really exciting to me. And that was the first time I'd really kind of heard about affirmations. Then I started learning about it more from the metaphysical standpoint. And I think one of the things that kind of gets people tripped up is they think, well, okay, I'm going to say my affirmation 15 times. By a couple of weeks, I should have a BMW. or whatever, you know, we want. And then 2 weeks go by, we don't have a BMW, and we go, oh, that doesn't work. I'm not going to do it. And I think there's so much more nuance to this. I think the first part is belief. Is if we say an affirmation that we don't really believe, then that belief is triggered in us, whether we're conscious of it or not, whether we give voice to it or not. So if I say, you know, I want this, but I don't really believe it, well, my brain is still operating from that paradigm of, no, it's not going to happen. And then I will not make choices that will get me what I want. So I think a big piece of it is that we have to really examine our beliefs. And that can get really, really tricky for a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of reasons why we believe what we believe.
Yeah.
And I think getting into these core beliefs of why or why not I can have something, or I can do something, or I can be something, really affects whether or not we can manifest. What I believe happened in the Scott Adams case is he believed his cartoon would succeed. He believed it. And so his affirmation reminded him daily of what he was working towards and where he wanted to go. But then the rest of the time, he was making choices that made that cartoon happen. And it's all because of the belief that it was good enough, he was good enough, and it was going to happen. So, and I think when we get into coming back to kind of the brain training aspect, when we have had these experiences in our lives, some of them we may not even really be conscious of, that have affected how our brain functions and how it works, that can change how we believe. And that can then, at times, I think, sabotage our ability to use affirmations to manifest.
Yeah, sometimes that does happen.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just I was affirming.
You're affirming.
Yeah, it does happen.
Yeah.
That I think.
And so, to me, what is really exciting is that when we start to do personal work on ourselves, and personal work, there are so many different paths, and none is right or wrong or the one. You have to kind of find the one that's right for you. But when we start working on our personal work and we start doing some introspection and start to look at why we believe what we believe, then we can, again, it's that kind of symbiotic relationship. Yes, my brain makes me do whatever, but at the same time, I can change my brain. And I can start to change what I'm thinking, change what I'm doing, and make different choices. But sometimes we have these subconscious programs running underneath. And I think that's then when we want to look at some things like brainwave training, working with a counselor, working with a coach, trying to find some of these programs that maybe we're not conscious of that are affecting our beliefs and thus our manifestation.
Yes, definitely. And I'll tell you, along with what you said, I see frequently people who take an affirmation and they repeat and repeat the affirmation, but they it's not, their heart isn't in it.
Yes.
If that makes sense. And affirmations can, if used correctly, help to inspire a belief change. They can also, when you already have that positive belief system, they really have a lot of power. But it really is, I think, the belief that really does the work. The belief, and not only belief, to go past that, doing the work. Because you don't, because it does require that. It requires the action. It requires making those choices. Like you said, making those choices that are bringing you to your good and bringing your good to you, and they are conducive for that type of environment and that type of abundance. But when you don't believe what you're saying is going to work, then you're not going to do the work, and it's not going to work.
There's
got to be a connection. Again, this goes hand in hand with what we were talking about earlier about how everything is connected. It's not just in the brain. It's not just in the body. It's not just in the spirit. Mm-hmm. Everything is connected. So your heart's got to be in it. Your soul's got to be in it. Your body has to do the work that's required. Your mind has to hold the belief system and hold you up. So, it's definitely all working in concert towards your own greater good and the greater good of others.
Yeah. And I think that kind of touches on another idea that sometimes I think doesn't always get talked about in the realm of affirmations of, when is it not working? Why? And I think sometimes when we start looking at these belief systems about ourselves and whatnot, we start to realize, if we can really dig in there, that, oh my goodness, I am trying to manifest something that is not necessarily what I truly want. It is something that I've been told I want by my family, my spouse, my society. And so then that becomes an interesting piece, too, when we really get to start to know who we really are, which in some traditions is taught to be the purpose as to why the soul comes to Earth, is to learn who we really are. And when we look at things, like going back to the BMW example, maybe I think I want this BMW because my father always had a BMW and he thought that was a really big deal, and so I feel like I need to have one to be a really big deal. That would be a piece of unconscious programming that maybe a person wouldn't be aware of. But when they really start to sit down, sit quietly, and look at their beliefs and kind of feel intuitively, ooh, why is that not sitting quite right? And going, wait a minute, that's my dad's story. That's not my story. That's his experience, and that's what he wants. What do I want?
Yeah.
And then that turns into another piece.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go on. No.
Oh, I was going to say you touched on there something I think that is a key is the intuition, learning to listen to that still small voice, which is just as much a part of your brain as everything else is. A lot of people, they think of the logic and the reasoning, and those are all well and good, and we do need those processes frequently. But we can't ignore that intuition. As a matter of fact, I was just reading some research that says that that the parts of the brain that are really responsible for intuitive decision-making are some of the newest parts of the brain.
Yes.
And something that evolved maybe about 200 million years ago. Which is relatively recent in the history of evolution. And then I think that extrapolated more later on into cognitive reasoning, into logic. But to separate the two and to ignore one is really not in our own best interest. And we're so often taught in our society, you're just being, it's your imagination. Or, why do you think that? But that gut feeling, that hunch, that intuition, there's a reason for that. It exists for a reason, and it should be heeded. And there's actually studies that can show that intuitive decision-making is frequently more accurate and beneficial than decision-making based on logic and reason.
Absolutely, Nikki. And that kind of pulls me back a little bit to more of the brain training aspect, in that, before my personal experience was, before my brain was trained, there was just a lot of mind chatter going on. Like, my mind just constantly was going. And although I have kind of an artistic intuitive bent, I also have kind of an analytical problem solving bent. The analytical problem solving was out of control. It just would not stop. And after I had my brain train, the first few days after my sessions were completed, I remember is I went back to work and I hardly spoke to anybody except for like the most important pieces of information I needed to give. The rest of the time I was silent. And I was that way for about 3 days because I had never experienced inner silence before. And that was an amazing gift. And as my body adjusted to everything being quiet, what I found was that my own intuition became so much stronger because it was not getting drowned out by this constant chatter, 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 go, 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 go. And I am much better at intuiting things in my environment because things are quiet now. And, a lot of times when I said I often have mediums and psychics who come as clients, they have reported some similar things, is that it's helped them to have a stronger channel to spirit because all this other is not getting in the way, and they're not having to keep all of this other at bay. It's a clear channel. And that to me is exciting because that's something that any of us can benefit from. They say we're all intuitive. We all have that ability, but so many of us have had that trained out of us for all the reasons you said earlier.
Very true. And what I think is that what you've achieved is a balance, and I think that's an important balance. A lot of those analytical aspects being concentrated more in the left hemisphere and the intuitive being concentrated more in the right, I think those two hemispheres were meant to work together as one functioning unit. There should be a balance between the logic and the analysis and between that and the intuition and the creative thinking process. I think when you achieve that balance, I think it's when man, yeah, talk about a clear channel. Definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know the dangers of overthinking because we can see it every day. Mm-hmm. We can see it in the person who waits too long to make the decision on that job and the job is gone, or
mm-hmm.
waits too long to decide if they want to put money down on the house to move, even though they feel it's a good move, and then the house
yeah.
is, boom, gone. Or I see it a lot in relationships, particularly with my clients,
yeah.
overthinking each other's communication style,
yeah.
overthinking things that happen in the relationship that really either should or shouldn't
mm-hmm.
be taken seriously, and either overthinking and sometimes underthinking too.
Right.
But I think the balance is necessary. I don't think we're meant to be just one or the other. I think to function as a balanced person, we need a good balance between those
mm-hmm.
aspects.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're really seeing that. We see this in the metaphysical communities, and we're talking a lot about, you know, divine male and divine female, that it's not one overpowering the other, because our tradition is that one has to be dominant, but it's that they both work in conjunction, and it's the divine male and divine female inside of us works in conjunction with each other. And outside, we see this, that men and women working together as a team, we're moving into that in our society, which is so exciting. And and I think it's reflected in so many ways. We're ready to move into this. I read in a book called The Jeshua Channelings about this kind of third way of being. It's that we are able to be in duality, that we are able to be in a world of opposites and yet function knowing that basically that both are okay and both are needed and both are important. And to me is what you just said, that it's really going to help, I think, our society move forward, our species move forward, when we start to embrace that this kind of balance.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. You know, and I see it a lot in the workplace because I've worked in male-dominated environments and female-dominated environments,
mm-hmm.
and they both are problematic.
Yes.
I tell you what, I am all for female empowerment. I am a feminist to the hilt.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
But there is nothing more frustrating for me than working in an all female environment. It's like you need the male aspect to balance things out to keep all of us from killing each other.
Yes. Exactly.
And sometimes
you
need the feminine in a male environment. You need the feminine in a male environment too to kind of bring a sense of, well, I don't even have a word for it.
Right, but it's that more intuitive, free-flowing, creative energy. Yeah. Yeah.
And we all have both of these things within us.
Yes.
It's like we're a microcosm of what needs to be happening outside of us as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? We have a caller. We have a caller who may have a question.
Hello,
and
awesome.
I am so excited. Let me get them on the line here.
Okay.
Oh, they disappeared. All right, we don't have a caller. Maybe they'll call back. We miss you, caller. Wherever it was that you went to, we miss you. Let's talk a little bit about the brain training itself, the brainwave training itself.
Yeah.
For those of our listeners
okay.
who are not familiar, how does this process work?
Okay. So the type of technology that I use is considered what we call a global training system. And what that means is that it is training the electrochemical, more the electrical part of the brain. And it's training all of the brain at the same time. So it's a global system. So again, it's helping to create that balance of activity in the brain. When we see imbalances in people, what we mean by that is that there is too much or too little of the electrical activity that allow neurons to communicate with each other in different portions of the brain. And that can manifest as a variety of problems. It can manifest as inability to pay attention, difficulty sleeping, mind chatter, sometimes mood issues. So, you know, people who feel down, unmotivated, people who have anger struggles, those types of things usually happen because there's too much or too little of this activity. And a lot of people don't know this because we don't talk about this so much in Western culture. We talk a lot about the chemical part of the electrochemical activity, but we don't talk about the electrical part. So the chemical part are the neurotransmitters that allow the neurons to decide to, you know, engage in an activity or not engage. But there is an electrical component, an electrical signal that is sent from neuron to neuron to neuron that tell the neurons to either release these chemicals or not release them, and to take up chemicals or not take chemicals from other cells. And so when we have too much of this activity or too little, that's when the problems happen. So,
yeah, and that makes a good deal of sense. You've got to, again, it's a balance issue.
It's absolutely, it all comes down to that. It's a balance issue. And so what the technology and the training does is it actually can take this electrical activity that your brain puts off, and it puts it into a computer that we use, and the computer has mathematical algorithms that change that activity into sound. And the sound is played back to you through a composed piece of music. And when your brain hears its own activity, it's like the electrical activity of your brain is like a fingerprint. It's unique to you. There's nobody else in the world that has the same patterning that you have. And so
that's probably good in my case.
It's a good thing for all of us. And when you hear your own activity, it's like it's holding a mirror up to your brain, because it's giving information to your brain that your brain really can't get anywhere else. And so imagine that you speak and you can't hear your own voice, and then all of a sudden you could hear your own voice. This is what it's like. It's your brain puts out this activity, but it's not aware of it, of what it's doing. And then all of a sudden it gets this information. And it's like, oh, well, I don't want to do that. I want to do this over here. I'm going to change that. Your brain changes on its own when it gets this information. And it's like you said, it moves more towards balance. And so the technology basically is helping your brain to learn how to function in a more balanced and more efficient state.
You know, and I think that's amazing because it shows the brain is self-correcting.
Mm-hmm.
It can be self-correcting.
Yeah.
And I love that our bodies and our brains have evolved to a point where that is possible for us.
Yes. Yeah. And to me, it also speaks again to this notion that we are not our brains. And when I've worked more in like this medical setting, what I struggle with is that I see that clients believe that their brain is who they are. And that's not true. So if your brain is not working correctly, whether you have a head injury or you've had a disease process or a stroke or something, or even just you were kind of born in a way that your brain wasn't working quite right, that does not mean that you don't work quite right or there's something wrong with you. Our brain is separate from who we are. And that's a scary concept for some people. But it is separate. We cannot make our brains be balanced just because we want them to be balanced. Sometimes we have to go in, whether it's we take medication, we get our brains trained, we do a strong meditation regimen, or a combination of all of these three things. Our brain sometimes needs some help to get into a place where it serves, because that's what it does. It serves us. It's a tool for us. And, you know, if you have a rusty wrench, that's not going to help you a whole lot.
Yeah.
And if your brain's not right, it's not going to help you either.
It makes a lot of sense to me. I grew up in a family with a very severely bipolar parent who he knew that wasn't him.
Yeah.
It was difficult for him to be him. When he was him, he was happy, he was gregarious, he was loving. And he said at one point, I feel like I'm two different people, like a Dr. Jekyll and
right.
Mr. Hyde. And,
yeah.
and I really felt for him because of that, because who wants to be forced to not be themselves? That he knew that's not who he really was, you know,
exactly.
at the core of his being. And he was helped with medication, but I think he could have, I think that if the brain training had been around back in the brainwave training, I don't think it would have done amazing things for him without possibly without so much of the heavy medication that he had to
take.
That would have been beautiful. But it was wonderful that he did find a way to be more of himself, to be more
exactly.
of himself.
And, you know, Nikki, that is one of the things that I learned. If I have learned nothing else on this journey with brainwave training, it's this. I truly believe everybody is a good person. Even the most heinous criminal on the news, the politician you don't like, the world leader, every one of those people, the real them is good, but something has gone wrong. And they are not able to express the true self. And it doesn't excuse that any behavior. It doesn't excuse hurting people. It doesn't excuse, you know, things that have a negative real-world impact. What that says is that people need help when they are in those positions. And they need love. They need help. They need to want to get help. But that's what they need. More punishment causes more trauma, which just makes a vicious cycle. But when we can kind of step back and go, no, that's not who people really are. We can have some understanding and empathy for people. It helps us too.
Yeah, very much so. That's really very eye-opening and wow. And I've had the pleasure of experiencing the brainwave training in a little mini session for myself. And I got to tell you guys, I had some of the most amazing visions as a clairvoyant that I have ever had in my life. And even just that one time was a very eye-opening, spiritually speaking, experience for me. Let me ask you if you can give us your contact information so that our listeners can contact you for brainwave training so they can enhance their own lives.
My phone number is 913-954-7007. You can visit my website at www.thefocusedbrain.com, and that's thefocusedbrain.com. Or you can email me, Mandy, my name is spelled MANDEE, at thefocusedbrain.com. And even if you just have some questions about what we talked about, please feel free to contact me because I'd be happy to answer them. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to be back with you in just a minute for a few last words. We're going to go to Mike right now so he can let us know what's coming up in PRS. Take it away, Mikey.
Okay. Coming up April 16th, we'll have Dr. Stephen Summers, Past Life Regression. That will be both a discussion and a past life session for the entire group. May 21st, our guest is Susan McKenzie, and June 11th, we'll have Matthew Gaines. These will all be at the Westwood, Kansas Community Center, 4700 Ringbow. PRS members do get to attend for free. Anyone else is welcome to join us for $5. More information will be on our website, prskc.org.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Mike. And next week right here on Radio PRS, we have Gregory Prigon, who is going to be talking to us about gemstone healing and also about the KC Light Community, which is a wonderful organization where those of us who are light workers or who just want are interested in seeking more interest about a variety of topics, we meet about twice a month to do some really great activities and learn new stuff. It's a lot of fun. So he's going to be with us next week. I look forward to that. Mandy, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Thank you very much. Do you guys have any events that you have coming up that you'd like to tell us about?
We don't have any right at this time, but we are looking at our summer calendar, and that will be on our website under events. Or you can also like our Facebook page, and that's Mandy Noble, the Brain Fitness and Training Center, on Facebook, and I do post upcoming events there.
Wonderful, wonderful. So do you have any parting words of brain wisdom for us?
My best one is just take care of your brain. Wear helmets if you're going biking. You know, make sure you're being safe when you're in the car. Your brain is probably your most precious tool that you have, so take care of it.
Definitely, definitely take care of it. Eat healthy, feed it healthy. Make sure you're learning. Always learn new things. Oh, yes, that's
always
so important. I know we touched on the cognitive reserve just a little bit, but
yes.
But I really do believe that is one of the keys to a long and happy brain life.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Nikki. I appreciate being on the show.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
We love having you here. And like I said, I always learn something. I always learn something when you're on here, and I love that. So thank you so much, and you have a very wonderful evening, and I look forward to seeing you again very soon. And you take care. And all of you out there, take care as well. Thank you so much to Mike for being my wonderful co-host as always. Thank you again to Mandy Noble for being our fabulous guest. Oh, what a great show. Thank you so much to the PRS who brings us this wonderful show every week. Remember that all of our episodes are archived. So if you know someone who missed this and would be interested or would like to catch up on some of our past episodes, or heck, all of our past episodes, you can find them all at blogtalkradio.com/PRSKC Radio. Thank you all very much for listening, and have a blessed evening. Cue that music.